The words homeward bound have a really special meaning for sailors, especially when you've been away on a long voyage, gone around the world. You've experienced great camaraderie with your mates. You've had culture shock in foreign ports. You're eating totally different foods, sleeping different hours, traveling through time zones, across hemispheres. There's nothing like it. You get that salt in your skin, and the ship is your home. And that's a wonderful feeling, but there comes a time where you know the ship is being turned around and you're heading home. Just that phrase, homeward bound. When you get back to the loved ones that you left behind, that romantic relationship that you left behind, the relationship with your parents and brothers and sisters and cousins and other friends, there's just something special about going back home after you've been across the sea. And that's what today's story is all about, homeward bound. Ahoy, shipmates! Welcome back to the Sea Stories and Science Fiction Podcast. I'm your host, Malcolm Torres, and I've got a great story for you today. It's called Homeward Bound. It's another story from Ocean Adventures, written by John Sherborne Sleeper in the 1850s. If you've ever been away from home for a long period of time where you've traveled to foreign countries and crossed oceans, left loved ones behind for a great period of time, and then you've gone home, you really understand what this story is all about. It has great deep affection and meaning to it. So we're just going to have a quick word from our sponsor, and then we'll get on with the story. This is Homeward Bound. It was a bleak day in the month of November. The north wind howled mournfully through the leafless trees. The broken clouds flitted rapidly across the face of the heavens, and the whole face of nature assumed an aspect cheerless and uncomfortable, well calculated to remind the moralist of the closing scenes in the great drama of life. As a traveler, with weary steps, wended his solitary way through one of those beautiful hamlets which abound in New England, and which constitute the noble ornaments, emblems of freedom, peace, and happiness, of which she is justly proud. To judge from his costume, this traveler belonged to the humblest ranks of life, or had been singled out as a victim by misfortune. His coarse straw hat, his patched doublet, and his canvas trousers, soiled by tar in many places, while they proclaimed his occupation and his poverty, seemed but poorly calculated to protect him from the inclemency of the weather. His form was cast in a manly mold, denoting great activity and strength. His features, bronzed by exposure to the tropical sun, and partly concealed from view by his luxuriant locks of coal-black hair, showed that he was still in the dawn of manhood. His eyes seemed lighted up with an intelligent spirit, by a gleam of expectation and hope, which showed that his humble fortune did not accord with his noble nature, that, however severely fate had dealt with him, his energies were still unbroken, and that maugre, the chill northern blast, and the fatigues which it was evident he had recently undergone, he was resolved to push onward until the object which he had in view was accomplished. "It is now 3 years," said this young sailor to himself, as he plodded along the road, "since I very foolishly left my happy home, urged by a silly pique and a love for a life of adventure, to brave the hardships and perils of the ocean. Since then my life has been a series of misfortunes. I have met with storms on every tack, but, thank Providence, although my canvas is sadly reduced, and pretty well worn out, and my pockets destitute of ballast, my hull is unimpaired, and my spirits as unbroken and buoyant as ever. I hope my parents are still living, and prosperous and happy. I was a fool to leave them. And my brothers and sisters, how happy we were together. And cousin Mary, that bright little sylph, whom I loved with a love surpassing that of cousins, and in whose company I have passed so many rapturous hours. Oh, I was a great fool to leave such blissful scenes, and I believe, after all, the little fairy loved me. I know she did. She all but told me so. But it is too late now to retrace my steps. I can only regret my folly. I dare say the bright and joyous young thing has forgotten Ned Willis and was married to some worthier fellow than I am long ago. Her rosy cheeks, laughing eyes, and sweet disposition, to say nothing of the property she was to inherit, attracted many admirers and made sad havoc among the hearts of the youths of the village. Well, if she is married, there is no more to be said. I have no right to complain. I hope she has chosen a good husband. I will see her once more, wish her a long life and a happy one, and away to sea again. But if she is not married? He did not finish the sentence, but a change came over the countenance of the ill-clad and weather-beaten mariner, as if he were indulging in a vision of rapture, and he involuntarily quickened his pace. As Edward Willis journeyed onwards towards his home, anticipating by turns happy and adverse fortune, he was surprised to find that, although it was in the middle of the week, there were no signs of labor among the inhabitants. All was quiet. Even the oxen were browsing contentedly in the pastures, and schoolhouses were closed, and the meeting houses were open. The people whom he met with were neatly arrayed in their Sunday clothes, and their countenances were wreathed with smiles of gratitude and joy. On inquiry, he learned that it was Thanksgiving Day. He hailed the information as a glad omen. On the day when this poor, forlorn-looking traveler, after years of wandering, was pursuing his way towards his native village, the fire burned brightly in the hearthstone of his parents. Deacon Willis was a New England farmer, a man who, by cherishing the virtues of industry and frugality, had become possessed of a handsome property, and who, enjoying a competence in a free country, protected by a wise government, surrounded by kind and intelligent neighbors, and at the head of a happy and virtuous family, envied neither nabobs nor riches nor monarchs their power. It was Thanksgiving Day, and great had been the bustle in Deacon Willis's family for the previous week. Descended in a direct line from one of the earliest settlers of New England, no consideration could have induced the worthy deacon to abate one jot of the pomp and pride and circumstance of the Thanksgivings of the Puritans. Thanksgiving was religiously observed by him, as it had been his father before him, and the gratitude which he expressed to his Creator for the mercies which he had received was not a mere formula of unmeaning words, but came directly from the heart. On this day his children were collected around him, and all anticipated a joyous Thanksgiving. Several of his distant relations, who were not so well provided with the good things of this life as the worthy deacon, also accepted an invitation to be present. Among those who were sheltered by his hospitable roof, on this occasion, the greatest favorite seemed to be Mary Wordsworth, a blue-eyed damsel whose lovely and expressive face told more about sweetness and purity than I could describe in a folio volume. She was the only daughter of a cousin of the worthy deacon's, and at an early age had been deprived of her parents by death. But Deacon Willis had been to her a parent. His house had been to her a home. His wife had treated her with a mother's kindness, and his children regarded her as a sister and a dear friend. Mrs. Willis's situation as mistress of the family was no sinecure on that day. Her duties were various and important, for it was the New England holiday, and all her skill as a housewife, all her excellence as a manager, was put to the test on Thanksgiving Day. After the family returned from meeting, for they were of good old-fashioned sort, who would almost as soon lose their Thanksgiving dinner as be deprived of their Thanksgiving sermon. The table was set in the large front parlor, which was wont to be used only on extraordinary occasions, and preparations for the festival commenced. A good fire made of walnut and yellow oak wood burned cheerfully in the large open fireplace, and all the females belonging to the house were put in requisition to bear the abundance of the good things from the kitchen to the parlor, and which, when deposited in their respective places, made the tables groan again. At the head of the table was placed a portly turkey, the choicest of the large and pampered family. At the furthest extremity was deposited a ham of a size and flavor to make a Westphalian commit suicide through envy and despair. While here and there, scattered in rich profusion, around the table, in apparent disorder, but with deliberate care and precision, were boiled and roasted fowls, chicken pies, jellies, knick-knacks, applesauce, and plates of vegetables of more varieties and excellence than I would willingly undertake to enumerate. While on the kitchen table, arranged apparently as a corps de reserve, might be seen a stately plum pudding, supported by several enormous Thanksgiving pumpkin pies, with mince pies, apple pies, squash pies, and custard pies, with fruits of various kinds, not forgetting nuts and apples to bring up the rear. As a beverage on this happy occasion, water was the only article provided. Water brought from a clear and sparkling spring which bubbled up a few rods from the house, for Farmer Willis contended that water was the best drink, even on festive occasions, and that hilarity and joy should be prompted not by wine or strong drink of any kind, but by social communion, by a free interchange of thoughts and ideas, by generous feelings born and nurtured in noble bosoms. It was nearly 2 o'clock, long after their accustomed hour of dinner, before the assembled company were invited into the parlor to partake of the good cheer which had been so bountifully provided. And, as the happy company stood around the tables, waiting for their host to ask the divine blessings upon the meal which was placed before them, a shade flitted across the good man's brow, for his eldest son, a noble youth, was absent. Among the joyful faces which surrounded him, Edwards was not seen. He had left his home years before to embrace a seafaring life, and the wanderer had not returned. There was reason to believe that he was no longer in the land of the living, and although they still strove to cherish hope in each other's bosoms, many and bitter were the tears of affection which had embalmed his memory. Deacon Willis did not intend to cast a damp over the spirits of the happy group, and his words were but echoes of his thoughts, as he involuntarily exclaimed, "Were Edward here, we should indeed be happy." "My poor dear boy," exclaimed Mrs. Willis, "ah, I much fear we shall never see his smiling face again." Mary Wordsworth said nothing, but a tear started in her eye, and any casual observer would have seen at once that Edward Willis was dearer to her than a cousin or a friend, and that she cherished his memory in the very depths of her heart. Just then old Bose, the house dog, was heard to make some angry remonstrances to a passing traveler, which attracted attention, inasmuch as it was by no means an ordinary occurrence, for Bose was a well-nurtured brute, and seldom accosted a well-dressed, gentlemanly personage in a rude and angry manner. But he entertained the prejudices against the victims of misfortune or intemperance, wearing the garb of poverty, which is cherished by nobler animals who boast the attributes of reason. In truth, Bose, although a faithful dog, was an aristocrat in his principles. The traveler, from his appearance, moved in the humblest rank of life, and Bose intended to give him a reception correspondingly with his shabby appearance, and was advancing towards him in a surly manner and truculent look when Deacon Willis, who well knew the peculiarities of his dog, told his son James to go out and protect the stranger from violence. "He seems a sailor too," said he, "and on a day like this we should not refuse the rites of hospitality to the humblest being who passes along the road. On Thanksgiving Day, no individual, rich or poor, sailor or landsman, should want for a plentiful meal. Ask him in, my son," continued the noble-hearted farmer, "and let the poor wayfarer take a seat at our board." The stranger entered the parlor, and room was made for him at the table. But his appearance and manner were strange, and he seemed as if he was ill-disposed to requite his kind hosts for the hospitality he enjoyed. He did not even raise his dilapidated hat from his head, and to the kind inquiries which were made of him, he scarcely deigned any reply. But, as if overcome by fatigue or agitated by contending emotions, he threw himself into the nearest chair and covered his brow with his hands. The wondering group witnessed his conduct in silence. "Come now, my good man," at length exclaimed Mrs. Willis, in a kind, motherly tone. "I dare to say you are tired and hungry. Take a seat at the table and make yourself at home. We like sailors, and would gladly do you a good turn for the sake of one who has long been absent. Don't cry, Mary. You should learn to restrain your feelings." Just then, old Bose, who, when the sailor first came in sight, was disposed to regard him as an enemy, much to the surprise of the children, suddenly conceived the most lively attachment to the poor straggler. He wagged his tail with unwonted energy, absolutely danced around him, whined forth his joy in the most expressive manner, and continued the pantomime by jumping up into his lap and attempting to lick his face. The stranger hardly attempted to repulse the affectionate animal, but, gently patting his head, addressed him with an endearing epithet of "Poor old Bose," adding, "You have not forgotten me," and then raised his head, took his hand from his forehead, removed his hat, and brushed away the long and matted locks which partly concealed his features. His voice had touched a chord in the bosoms of the persons present, which had long ceased to vibrate. The eyes of Deacon Willis and his wife were turned upon him in eager expectation. Mary Wordsworth started. The rose on her cheek gave place to the lily, and her deep-seated and pure love proved more quick-sighted than even paternal affection. She gazed upon him with a look in which joy and surprise were blended, and met his glance, which beamed with tenderness and rapture, expressing the fruition of earthly enjoyment. Her maidenly reserve was conquered by her surprise and joy at beholding him before her, a dear one whom she had long mourned as forever lost. "It is Cousin Edward," she said, and she threw herself into his arms. The scene which followed may be imagined, but cannot be described, nor shall I attempt it. There was no longer any alloy in the enjoyment of their happy family, and Deacon Willis, albeit always noted for his piety, never offered up a Thanksgiving prayer with greater fervency and sincerity than on that occasion. After dinner was over, Edward had a long tale to tell, to which his auditors listened with breathless attention, of the perils and sufferings he had experienced during the previous 3 years. The vessel in which he had sailed for South America had been suspected of carrying on a contraband trade, and the crew were condemned to the mines for life. Edward, with two of his companions, and the imminent risk of his life, succeeded in effecting his escape, and worked his passage home in a vessel bound to Providence. Misfortune still pursued him. The vessel was wrecked on Block Island during a heavy gale, and after a desperate struggle with the waves, had succeeded in gaining the shore. He lost no time in proceeding to Providence in a fishing craft when he took his land tax on board. Weary, hungry, destitute of money and clothes, a poor shipwrecked sailor, Edward Willis at long last reached his home. "And you are welcome, my boy," exclaimed his father. "I hope you will never leave us again." Edward looked at Mary, who blushed like a peony. "I see how the wind sits," said the worthy deacon. "Come hither, Mary Wordsworth." Mary, with trembling steps, approached her guardian. "Mary," said the deacon, "we must look to you for security that Edward will never play truant again." He put her trembling hand in that of his son. "Edward has never been to sea since. He is now a happy and prosperous farmer, and blessed with the affectionate wife and 3 lovely children. He every year welcomes the approach of November, and reads in the newspapers with keen gratification the governor's proclamation for Thanksgiving Day." You have to admit that was a sweet story. And those of you who've been away to sea, you know that it really is true. When you come back home and see your parents and your brothers and sisters and your friends and your wife or your husband or your girlfriend or your boyfriend, you know it's so sweet having been away and worked all those long hours and journeyed across through all those foreign lands to come home to your family and your home. It's profound. I've had that experience myself several times, and I still remember it to this day. Well, shipmates, that's another sea story in the books, and I will once again beseech you gracefully and humbly asking you to please go to the Apple iBooks or go to Amazon and look me up on there. My name is Malcolm Torres. I have several free stories. There's one called The Pirate. There's another called 64 Days. There's several others. There's a novel on there called Sailors Take Warning. It's like a sci-fi horror novel. It takes place aboard an aircraft carrier. I've got another novel that I've written on there. It's called Sailor's Delight. And it's about a broken down sailor, a young guy who's got PTSD, and he has to stay behind in Honolulu, Hawaii, while his ship leaves port and he's there for medical reasons. And it's a bit of a comical adventure kind of story, but you might enjoy that. And then there's a crime story called The Pirate about a young deckhand in the Coast Guard. And then there's a whole selection of stories called the Sea Adventure Collection, which is about some young sailors who are on the Western Pacific visiting the Philippines and Japan. Check out some of those stories there, and there'll be more in the future. And looking forward to meeting you. I've been meeting quite a few people through direct messaging on Instagram and Facebook. So yeah, let's build a community around sea stories and science fiction. And until our next story comes out in a few days, fair winds and following seas, shipmates.